Mike Griffith, AJC's Dog Nation. We're going to get into football, obviously. But, Griff, I've got a question from Johnny Vegas, who's down on the Florida Emerald Coast. Wants to know, he's trying to get a read on South Carolina baseball. So he's asking, how good is Georgia baseball this year? Obviously, South Carolina looks much improved. And he's trying to figure out if they're a threat or not, South Carolina.
Well, I don't know, Bill. I mean, I don't think Georgia's really that good this year in baseball. I don't think they have much pitching, so I wasn't surprised that South Carolina swept them. I mean, they lost their opening day game to Jacksonville State. Just no facilities to speak of relative to other SEC schools, and it catches up with you, you know. So I don't know that I can gauge South Carolina off of one series. I know that, what does the SEC have, like 8 or 9 teams ranked in the top 25, and I think Carolina's around 14. So and I think they might be like 6th or 7th of the SEC schools at 14. So way too early to get a read. And then also, I'm sure, you know, he knows that as the season progresses, you know, a lot of these young arms fall by the wayside, and teams can and do change. I mean, was it Ole Miss that barely got an NCAA tournament and won it all? So obviously I heard Carolina has an outstanding hitting coach. And they sure did bet Georgia around this last weekend in Athens.
Came up earlier about quarterbacks, and obviously Georgia's got 3 competing with probably an incumbent. Alabama's got 2, Ohio State's got 2. And the question was, between those 3, who will have the best quarterback? All of these guys are highly decorated. Griff, I know each school's individually will make their own decisions, but do you think they'll try and hold off until we get into games before they name somebody?
I mean, if they need to, you know, I think that, you know, I don't know if I'd say there's an incumbent at Georgia, Bill. I might reel you in on that one. You know, they're putting in some runs. Vandergriff's a better runner. I don't know where Stockton is. I don't think he's in the top 2. I think it's pretty much Beck and Vandergriff right now. And Vandergriff's staying in the fall. I don't, you know, somebody's saying he's transferring. Listen, the guy's committed to graduating from Georgia, whether he's the starter or the number 2. So, it's going to be Beck and Vandergriff, I think, battling it out. I think Stockton is right there, but he's still learning the offense a bit. Super smart guy. You know, maybe not the arm strength that Beck and Vandergriff have at this stage. I mean, these guys get better as they go. I wouldn't rule them out, but I think right now it's a 2-horse race. And, yeah, to your point, Kirby's not in any hurry to decide on who the starter is. Or at some point, you wonder if one will start getting – significantly more reps than the other. I mean, that's kind of what happened last year. There really wasn't a quarterback competition. You know, after Georgia went after Caleb Williams in the portal and wasn't able to get him, they kind of had to negotiate with Stetson Bennett and pretty much say, you're the guy. It wasn't like he was going to have to win it over Beck, because once they couldn't get Caleb Williams, Stetson became their best option, so they named him the starter. This is different, obviously, in that none of these guys really have a ton of meaningful experience. So more open-ended between Beck and Vandergriff.
Now, if the topic, Griff, was high-end, who's got the superior high-end? Would it clearly be Vandergriff?
No, not necessarily. I don't think we've seen enough to say. I mean, Carson Beck is a flamethrower. He's got a really live arm. He's athletic. Maybe not the runner that Brock is. There's 2 types of quarterbacks, but way too soon, again, because neither one's really been tested at the collegiate level.
Mike Griffith with us, AJC's Dog Nation, joins us each and every Tuesday. Griff, are you watching much of the NCAA tournament?
Not really. You know, bits and pieces. You know, I did the bracket challenge, and both the teams I picked for the final are already out, which proves, again, that the best teams in the regular season don't always win the tournament. Sometimes, matter of fact, I don't know how many times they actually have. You know, it's a different game. It's a tournament sport. And, but I caught bits and pieces. You know, I had interest in watching, Bruce Pearl and Auburn. I thought they gave a really game effort against Houston, and, you know, their backcourt caught up with them. We knew that was their ceiling. You know, Bruce didn't have great guard play, I didn't think. And I knew sooner or later that would catch up with them. That's a really good Houston team. And then I watched Michigan State. Obviously, that's my alma mater. But I watch it more, for Izzo. You know, I got to cover Tom for 4 years and got to know him really well. And, you know, again, personally, he's just one of those guys, personally, when you get to know, like Pearl, I've gotten to know both those guys really well. You get to know these guys, and you want to see them do well on a personal level. You know, just because you know what they're, you know how they've built their programs, you know how hard they work, you know how they build teams, and then of course I watched Tennessee. You know, I covered Rick Barnes for a couple years and got to know Coach Barnes really well, as well as those other two. And you know, it was good to see Tennessee win. Tell you what, I don't like. I don't like this idea that somehow they're going to turn into the hated. Just stop that lazy narrative that there's haters. There's not. Tennessee basketball has a tremendous following. They're among the best in the nation in attendance every year. So that's a BS narrative that there's a bunch of haters. There's a few idiots on social media, you know, that took shots at the team when they struggled, you know, after injuries and in different games. But that's not a hated team. Okay, it's nothing like, you know, the thing that Tennessee baseball had going, you know, with Tony Vitello and the players being rude to umpires and opposing teams. They're nothing like that. Rick Barnes is first class, and he's not a bad guy. And to suggest that the team is thriving off haters is disingenuous. It's a lazy narrative. You know, you want to have fun and say, oh, everybody's rooting against Tennessee. They're not. Everybody's not rooting against Tennessee. Everybody's rooting for Rick Barnes and Tennessee. Everybody wants to see Coach Barnes wins. You're not going to put the black hat on that guy and make Tennessee out to be the bad guy in basketball, because they're not. Do they play physical? Sure, they play physical. That's a compliment. You know, I mean, it's not an insult. The fact that Jay Billis gets bent on it, I mean, Jay Billis gets bent on a lot of stuff. I mean, that guy is so inconsistent with his takes, and, you know, he's one of the – well, I won't continue, but he's a Duke guy, and Duke lost, and that's that. And if Coach K was there, that game would have been called differently. You can bet that. So Duke found out just how much they missed Coach K in that game, I'll tell you that.
Tell you what, Griff, I've never seen Duke – I don't want to use the word scared because they weren't scared, but, man, Tennessee's physicality – they were definitely disrupted. They looked intimidated in some way.
But, Bill, they've looked that way all year. This is a team of monsters. I saw these guys beat Georgia. I said, this is the Final Four team. I told everybody that, and I'm sticking to it. This is the Final Four team, especially the way that bracket's fallen now. You know, Purdue, there's nobody. Now, Michigan State's got some power, but I don't think they can match up with Tennessee's talent. And, you know, Michigan State plays hard physical, but I don't think they can out-physical, you know, Tennessee if they meet them. I said Final Four team long time ago. The way this team is built, defense travels. And I'll say this for Duke, too. And I don't even, you know, this tells you how little I follow college basketball. You know, their coach. You know what? How about you wear a suit and tie if you coach Duke? You're a little young and nobody-ish to be wearing some sweatshirt coaching a game. I don't know if you felt that way. But I felt that way. Like, if you're a young coach at Duke, don't you show up for the job interview every game, Bill?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was a little bit odd, and he didn't look like he had any answers for that physicality either.
No, he looked, you know, like he was in over his head. Duke's not going to be Duke again. Forget it. It's over.
Now, back to – I wanted to ask you, and I watched that Michigan State Marquette game, and that was a very good game, a very intense game with Shaka Smart and obviously Coach Izzo. What is it that makes Izzo tick? His teams are
team.
Speaking of
it's,
physical,
it's the
they're
way
always
he,
physical.
Well, it's the way he builds the team. It's the way the players are accountable to one another. I did a conference call last night with Brett Daniels of the College Football Playoff Committee Director about, you know, what it's going to look like in 2024 and media setups and things like that. And we were talking about locker room access after championship games. A lot of fans don't think about this, but in college sports, you really don't get locker room access hardly ever, maybe till the postseason. In basketball, that's the way it was, right? NCAA tournament time, locker rooms get open. Michigan State has open locker room after every single game, just like an NBA team. So when Michigan State gets to the postseason, they're comfortable. They're comfortable living in that fishbowl. And those players know how to handle not only the questions, but, Bill, they learn how to be accountable to one another. Because after every game, there's going to be a media throng of, you know, 12 to 15 guys go in that Michigan State locker room after losses, and they're going to ask what went wrong. They are. They're going to ask, hey, what happened? Why'd you guys lose? And we all know who missed the shot. We all know who had the bad turnover. But time and time again, those players take up for one another. And that's not an accident that Tom Izzo does this open locker room thing. It's genius because the players learn that they have each other's backs and they learn to be accountable to one another. It's unbelievably brilliant team building by Tom Izzo. Other coaches would be smart to do that as well, but they're not, right? So that's part of what makes Tom a genius. The other part is that he's genuine. Tom Izzo is who he is. And sometimes he'll say something. He'll preface it by saying, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, right, or I probably shouldn't say this. But he's the guy that's going to say it anyway. And when you've got that level of credibility that you're going to the social norm or put yourself out there for critics by having an unpopular opinion, to me, that gives coaches tremendous credibility. And as I said, you know, just as someone that covered Tom Izzo, I've said it many times. He is a guy that makes people who went to Michigan State University proud because of what he stands for and because of who he is. And he is truly an icon. Now, there's other coaches and other programs that win games, but they don't necessarily make their alumni proud because they don't do business the right way. So Tom Izzo's that guy. When you get a firm handshake, he means it. When you get an ass chewing, which I did a few times, he means that too. But he is who he is. And that's a story. So he does a coach's show. I mean, the guy does a coach's show every, I don't know, Tuesday, Wednesday night at this local Italian bar. And, you know, he every Christmas he plays his accordion, right, in front of the crowd, which is just hilarious. But when he's done with the show, he goes out the front door. And that means walking through that crowd of 100 people, shaking hands, getting patted on the back, you know, visiting with people for – when D'Antonio did the show, and listen, D'Antonio was a great football coach, but D'Antonio went out the back door. He didn't want to touch anybody. He didn't want anybody around. But that's just D'Antonio. D'Antonio was a different cat. He was a winner, and he beat Michigan like nobody's business, but that was just Mark. Mark was very, you know, I'm here to coach. I'm here to be the Wizard of Oz and get behind the curtain. Izzo goes through the crowd, and if he could body surf, he probably would.
I was going to ask you, with those two together, they're both hard-nosed guys, so that's similar, but you're saying personality-wise, they're not at all alike.
Oh, completely, yeah. It was fantastic. It was covering Michigan State those 4 years was just an ideal time in my career because I got to go to all the Big Ten schools, all the campuses, all the programs, and really got a taste and understanding after covering the SEC the first half of my career. That was a really good halftime break covering the Spartans. And obviously the football team was top 10 three out of the 4 years, and Izzo went to another Sweet 16, won a Big Ten title. So I got a real great taste of Michigan State. But to your point, very different. Very hard-nosed, right? Very driven. Both winners. But they went about things differently, for sure.
I'll never forget, I'm in Chicago at the Big Ten meetings. And it's the July after the sweater vest at Ohio State got fired over the Terrell Pryor thing. And I'm talking to D'Antonio about it on Mike now. And Mike, I'm not kidding. There's tears strolling down his face about his boy, about his guy. He was defensive coordinator.
Listen, Saban too now. You know he was Nick Saban's defensive backs coach at Michigan State.
Oh, yeah.
So to your point, the loyalty is intense. He's just a very private guy. Whereas Izzo is outgoing, you know, Mark is very ingoing and, you know, very fierce about his program's privacy. It's a Saban staple.
Yeah, amazing. I didn't think he was so upset over that whole thing. But anyways, Mike Griffith, AJC's Dog Nation. Mike, with all the access you get from football, what's the latest?
All that access that I get. I don't get pulled over on campus yet for trying to get close to the football. No, we've had player availability, and I'll tell you, it's obviously been a really difficult offseason for Georgia. I think it's pretty well documented. You know, there were a couple lives lost, and, you know, Jalen Carter settled a case, road racing and reckless. It's been a tough offseason. It really has. It's been tough. But what's been refreshing and promising is the players that have talked, they're not trying to sweep this under the rug and forget about it. They lost a teammate. They've got the picture of that teammate hanging up in their offensive line meeting room. They lost a recruiting staffer they were friends with. They've got a slogan, and it's probably not, you know, from a standpoint of good PR. It's probably not great PR because it reminds everybody that how these lives were lost in tragic form. But doggone it, Devin Willick was part of the team. And the players, they do it for Dev. And Kirby tells them, one of the players said, Kirby said, don't just say it, guys. You better mean it. Because Devin Willick was a young lineman, probably would have started this year on his way up, certainly an NFL prospect. Did everything the right way, and that has motivated these guys, and they talk about that new standard that they're carrying this offseason.
Griff, appreciate it, man.
All right, Bill, have a good one.
Mike Griff of AJC's Dog Nation, Omni Nashville Hotel.